Okay, my co-authors on this paper or this presentation are Adrian Duell, who is one of my former students. He graduated earlier this year with a PhD and is now doing a postdoc with the USDA in Gainesville, Florida. And Micah Gardner, who is currently my MS student. Adrian did the modeling work and Micah is doing the biology. We've heard a lot about mountain pine beetle these days, and I've been hearing a lot about mountain pine beetle for many years now, especially from Jesse Logan, and the fact that the beetle is expanding its range both in latitude and elevation, and also in host range as well, and that now we're getting a mountain pine beetle way up into the north, and it's reaching a point where it's actually threatening perhaps the jack pine as well. And if you look at the bigger picture here and we see the lodgepole pine range and the jack pine, which goes all the way over to the east, and then when we get into the eastern part of North America, we have species such as red pine and white pine, Scotch pine, and then further south, Virginia pine, loblolly pine, and shortleaf pine. And of course down here we've got another dendroctonous species, Dendroctonus frontalis, southern pine beetle. We've heard something about that today as well. And my question immediately was, well, if mountain pine beetle is perhaps responding to climate change, why can't southern pine beetle be doing that as well? And so just to do a quick review of the mountain pine beetle story, multiple studies across different scales have demonstrated the importance of synchronization of mountain pine beetle success. That is, when there is a whole number from terms of generations per year, mountain pine beetle is successful. In the west areas where synchronized generations have occurred, or where there are where it's a whole number, these are predicted as areas where the insect habitat occurs. Individual forest stands with specific aspects and elevations that would lead to synchronization are the same locations that have infestations. The mountain pine beetle's range encompasses the mountain west, and success is driven by topographical features that stratify host species over elevation. So these species range from relatively mountain pine resistant lower elevation species such as ponderosa pine and lodgepole pine to highly susceptible high elevation species such as whitebark pine. The high elevation species have historically been protected from attack by temperatures that do not enable the mountain pine beetle to have the requisite one generation every 2 years, according to Logan. So that's sort of a quick review of the mountain pine beetle story, or some of the things that I was thinking about when I started thinking about the story with southern pine beetle. And here you see the range of southern pine beetle, and we'll focus on the range here in the southeast. Susceptible hosts for southern pine beetle are arrayed continuously across a horizontal and vertical space. Now, we don't have the vertical kind of space that you have out west, but we do have the Appalachian Mountains, and so there is some vertical space as well. In some of the high elevations, other species occur, but their relative susceptibility to southern pine beetle preference is not clear at this time, or at least it wasn't back in 1980 when Thatcher wrote that sentence. Noteworthy facts about it: southern pine beetle, it does attack mainly loblolly and shortleaf pine. These are its two most prominent species. They are much smaller insect than mountain pine beetle. They do have this phenomenon of reemergence, that is, the beetle will sometimes not complete its overposition in one tree. It'll reemerge and attack another tree. So it continues to be a threat to standing trees. And there are many generations per year, and that varies depending upon the area. Development is affected by many factors. We'll focus on temperature and host species. As I mentioned, it prefers loblolly and shortleaf pine. It's known to attack almost any pine when populations are at outbreak levels, and large infestations have been observed on white pine in the southern Appalachians, and that's an important feature that I'll mention again. Here's the range for loblolly pine, and there's the range for white pine here. This is the historic record of southern pine beetle activity. You can see it includes all of loblolly pine, And it also includes shortleaf pine, which I'll show on the next slide. And so what's important here is, or the thing that I'm curious about right now, is this area right in here that encompasses white pine as well. And here's the range of shortleaf pine. It's it occurs further west and further north as well. It's more of a Piedmont species as opposed to loblolly pine, which is more of a coastal plain wetland species. We've been able to successfully infest white pine, and here you see a white pine infestation. It looks very similar to what you see in loblolly pine. Here's what the bark of white pine can look like at times. It's a smooth bark tree, especially in the early years, but as it ages, it starts to show features similar to, kind of similar to loblolly in many ways. Or even on young trees, you'll see this kind of cracking and fissuring of the bark, especially where the whorls are on white pine. Here's the historical record. Bob Colson showed this slide earlier. The historical record of southern pine beetle. This is the data set that we have analyzed. It goes back to 1960, it's current up to 2004. You can see the hot spots are right here and right here. What's of interest to us is this area right in here. That's sort of a hot spot, and that's where the white pine range starts. So, non-traditional hosts. Southern pine beetle hosts such as eastern white pine, red spruce, and Norway spruce have been considered exceptional or non-traditional hosts that are indiscriminately attacked during an epidemic on preferred host. But they cannot sustain the epidemic, or that's the line we've been using for many years. However, during the early part of this century, an epidemic raged in the southern Appalachians that killed many white pines, and this happened to coincide with a very severe drought that they were experiencing at that time as well. So in rare cases, even Norway spruce and red spruce and eastern hemlock were killed by southern pine beetle. Entire stands of white pines were destroyed, and this suggests that white pine infestations of southern pine beetle can indeed sustain an epidemic. So given climate change, given the wide host range of southern pine beetle, and its genetic plasticity and ability to sustain epidemics in non-traditional species, it appears that the geographic range of southern pine beetle is only constrained by host availability and climatic conditions. In the west, the Great Plains, of course, limits the spread of southern pine beetle, but to the north, there's host type up there. There's pines up there, as I mentioned earlier, and so it appears that perhaps the limiting factor might be climatic conditions. Air temperatures of minus 16 degrees cause almost total mortality of overwintering southern pine beetle. The isocline that corresponds to a probability of winter temperatures of minus 16 or colder approximates the northern limit of where southern pine beetle has been found. We found southern pine beetle as far north as New Jersey at times. Since host material is abundant further north, and an increase in minimum winter temperatures of just a few degrees could result in a substantial increase in the geographic range of southern pine beetle. So, temperature and southern pine beetle. The data that we utilized in our work was data collected in Texas in Bob Colson's lab by one of his former students, Terry Wagner, and this was data collected probably during an epidemic, southern pine beetle, back in the early 80s, and they found the development from eggs to the emergence ranged from about 27 days at 31 degrees C to 210 days at 10 degrees C. Almost no survival below 10 degrees C, and total mortality, as I said, at minus 16 degrees. And a decreased survival after 31 degrees at the other end of the scale. Now, this was data done in the laboratory, and it's the best set of data that we have available to us, at least at this point. And so we utilize this data in looking at predicting number of generations that we would see in a given county in the southeast over time. Southern pine beetle and climate change. So Global climate change models predict a rise in global temperatures. Since the southern pine beetle life cycles depend on temperature, we must consider the following implications: that the potential host range may shift, that the potential southern pine beetle range may shift, and that there may be an overlap of southern pine beetle range with what we now call non-traditional host pine, host trees, which would include red pine to the north, but we are now mainly interested in white pine. So the objectives that I want to talk about today are these two: to determine the growth parameters of southern pine beetle and white pine, and this is an ongoing project, and I'll explain why. We haven't really finished this part of it yet, and so I'll be talking mainly about what we're doing as opposed to what was accomplished. There's been delays on this part of it. And then I will also talk about the second objective, which is to determine a southern pine beetle success can be tied to temperature-mediated development, which would include synchronization of all generations, or of the first spring generation, and the number of predicted generations per year, the total number of generations per year. So the ongoing research that we're doing now deals with the development of southern pine beetle in white pine, and we are basically going to repeat the work that Terry Wagner did on loblolly pine in Texas. And we're going to repeat it not only on white pine, but on loblolly pine as well, just to determine if we're going to get the same numbers or not. And there's a good chance that we may not get the same numbers. One reason for that is we're having to rear southern pine beetles. As was stated earlier, there's not much southern pine beetle activity going on right now, and so we're having to rear the southern pine beetle in our rearing facility on campus, and we're rearing them in both loblolly and white pine, although right now most of our success has been in loblolly pine. And we've had some crashes, and that's the reason for the delay in the entire process. But these beetles that we're dealing with right now, it's the end of an epidemic, or we're in a low level phase and have been in a low level phase for some time. We're going all the way to Georgia to get these beetles. That's a 6-hour drive from Raleigh, North Carolina, so it makes for a long, tedious day. And when you look at these beetles, they look pretty wimpy. They don't look like the beetles that I was used to seeing when I was working with Colson down in Texas. So we may actually get different numbers than what Terry Wagner got. It's entirely possible. But we're basically following the same procedures that he used. We did find that we had trouble with the eggs desiccating, so we used another procedure where we're putting the eggs on auger, and that's helped quite a bit. And we're going to be looking at the same parameters that he looked at: the gallery length, egg density, bark and phloem thickness, adult southern pine beetle survival, density and type of southern pine beetle associates, such as competitors, predators, and parasitoids. We only have some very preliminary data that I'm not going to put too much reliance on. We do find that these southern pine beetle do lay eggs better in their more traditional host than they have in white pine, but these are beetles that developed on loblolly pine. We'd like to eventually get to the point where we're also examining beetles that completed entire life cycle on white pine as well, but we're not there yet. We have successfully infested various portions of white pine bowl, so we know we can do that. And egg survival has been hard to ascertain, but we've been making adjustments, which is the auger procedure that I just mentioned. So we hope to use this data to determine the white pine's suitability as a host for southern pine beetle, to better understand the southern pine beetle development and non-traditional host, to augment hazard maps, to improve southern pine beetle population models, and to aid in the development of long-term southern pine beetle range maps, and finally to elucidate the threat to white pine posed by this beetle. So on to the second objective, which was looking at the beetle's generations and synchronization of those generations. So to test this, the importance of generations and synchronization, we chose the Forest Service data set that went back to 1960, and that contains presence or absence of southern pine beetle infestations in the counties. Now, this is not the greatest data set in the world. It's not perfect, but it's a big data set, and it probably is good enough for this purpose. And So we feel it probably at least it is representative of what happened during that period of time. And this again is this data set, and this is this is the area that we are particularly interested in. And we also looked at the other data that we took is temperature data from all the local weather stations within each county. And then we determined number of generations, development of the beetle through the various generations based upon that, those weather conditions. And we used the Texas data to make those predictions about development and generation time. And we did that in two ways. We strictly interpreted the Texas data, and then we also fitted the parameters, adding a drop-off at high temperatures due to denaturization of the protein. So we looked at it in two different ways. And here's what we got. Generations of southern pine beetle over these counties, and it looks like the greatest success was sort of at the intermediate levels of generations. Number of generations that looked the best were between 4 and 5 generations per year, and that's where we had the most success in terms of the southern pine beetle's ability to maintain an infestation in those particular counties. And we only looked at counties that had a history of southern pine beetle, so we didn't include some like the counties in southern Florida or something like that. So 4 to 5 generations per year seemed to be the best in terms of sustaining a southern pine beetle infestation. Okay, now this slide's a little bit messy, but this is the influence of synchronization on the percent counties which have infestations. And so what we mean here is, first of all, the dark bars are counties that met synchronization. That is, there was a whole number of generations, be it 2 or 7 or whatever it was. They met the condition for synchronization. And the lighter bars are those counties that did not meet the conditions for synchronization. And we looked at synchronization in a number of different ways. Strict synchronization is where we actually took the Texas data and utilized it as is. So the sync fit method is where we adjusted the data for mortality at high temperatures. And then this is both methods together. And then half sync means that there was synchronization over a 2-year period, and using the data strictly. And half sync fit means synchronization over a 2-year period, but utilizing the adjusted method, and then both together. And then sync strict -1 means there was synchronization the year before, and the year before with the adjusted method and with both methods. And half sync -1 means there was synchronization the year before the 2-year period that was evaluated. And then this means any synchronization at all for any of the above, and any synchronization for the year before. Okay. Well, the result of all that, if you see there really isn't much to say. There's no real strong indication that synchronization had any impact at all. So we thought, well, we'll look at just the colder counties, or maybe synchronization is important. So now we're eliminating that fitted method we use, because now we're dealing with the colder counties where it never got warm enough for any mortality due to high temperatures. And again, not much synchronization. So this doesn't seem to hold true for southern pine beetle. Well, the one last thing we looked at was synchronization of just the spring generation. What we mean by that is we looked at the development of a cohort that laid its eggs during the fall over a 15-day period, and then looked at their emergence, or their predicted emergence, the following spring. And if that emergence occurred in less than 15 days, we said it was focused and it was synchronized. If it occurred in a longer period of time, it was not synchronized and not focused. And basically, we see that over a pretty long period of time, we don't see a whole lot of difference here. In fact, minor, just sort of small focusing resulted in the best conditions. But what is interesting is that these areas where there was no focus and no synchronization, there seemed to be a real drop-off. So this indicates that maybe the lack of synchronization might be important in that spring generation. So our conclusions are the number of predicted generations per year is related to southern pine beetle success, with intermediate predictions giving us the best results. Synchronization does not seem to be a driving factor in terms of southern pine beetle success. The lack of synchronization in the spring may be detrimental to SPB success, and the explanatory values variables we examine only explain limited variability in the data. More research is needed to capture the important features of the system, such as natural enemies and smaller scale landscape structure.